Okay, we'll see how far we get.
Can't just sit on the 100 now.
What?
So again, we want to thank the COA for this. Was this a monthly share?
Yeah, it's
a monthly shit, right?
No way.
Yeah.
And Josh Kahn's office,
Josh
right? Kahn's Josh Kahn's office, okay.
And I
think these type of classes really stand berumo shalolam, which means at the highest heights. And we'll explain why this stuff is so unbelievably important. By the way, next week, right, is the H3 summit, right, where we're having guest speakers from all over the country speak on topics of business ethics. Again, something that's so vital today that we need so desperately. And you'll see here, hopefully in the few minutes that I have, how important this is. So now I got 5 minutes? Okay. Okay, so you know what? I'm going to just start with what I wanted to end off with. I'm going to start with. How's that? Chazal say, Gemara in Pesachim, Daf Pei Zayin Amid Beis. Says the Gemara, Amar Reb Elazar, Lo Hegla Kodesh Bochu Es Yisrael Lebein Uma Ha Umais. The Gemara is really asking a question, why is it that a Kodesh Bochu spread out the Jewish people over the four corners of the world? No, and it was not to develop real estate, okay? He says, "Kidei sheyitasvu aleihem geirim." The purpose as to why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Jews everywhere in the world is to increase converts.
Recording in progress.
I know, I'm talking. Is to increase converts. So, what exactly does that mean? I love technology. So what in the world does that mean? Why, what's the problem with this? The problem is that we Jews are not into proselytizing other people. We're not into trying to bring converts. In fact, we try to discourage people from converting. They have the Sheva Mrs. B'nai Noach. You get yourself a piece of Olam Haba. You don't need 613 commandments. You don't need all this headache. So what in the world does the Gemara mean that a Kadosh Baruch Hu specifically dispersed the Jewish people to the four corners of the world in order that there should be an increase in converts, people joining the Jewish faith? What does that mean? So the Aruch HaTzadikim says, Givaldik. The Aruch HaTzadikim says, he quotes this Gemara, and he really starts out the paragraph by saying, we've been in such a long galus. This is hundreds of years ago already. Right? He said, we've been in such an unbelievably long galus. In order for us to get out of this galus, v'lechos b'chol somay shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shu emes. We have to hold on tightly to the seal of Hashem. What is the seal of Hashem? The seal of Hashem is emes, the truth. And he says that a person shouldn't lie, whether it comes to a Jew or to a goy, not to do any type of shtick, no type of tarmis. He says, quotes the pasuk, She'eris Yisrael lo yasa avla, that the Jewish people, the remnants of the Jewish people, should not do anything, any wrongdoing. Lo yidabru chazav, lo yimatz b'fiyam lashon tarmis. They shouldn't speak falsely. Everything should be erlich, 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 erlich. And he says, unbelievable, he says, the reason, what that Gemara means in Pesachim is not that we're going to proselytize by giving shiurim to goyim to convert. It means that when they see how we want Jews all over the world, because when they see how a Jew behaves, what does it mean how a Jew behaves? What? They see their Shabbos? He sees the Jews' Yontif? No, specifically says the Aruch HaTzadikim, they see how honest they are in business. They see that their word is a word, that their handshake is a handshake, that they're erlich. He says that's what impresses the goy. And that's the greatest Kiddush Hashem of all. The greatest Kiddush Hashem of all is that the non-Jew sees us and they say, wow, I can't believe it. Because what's their entree to the Jewish people? It's not Shabbos, it's not shaking a lulav, it's not your mezuzahs. Okay, midas, yeah, okay, you know, be nice, polite. But the ikur is, what's their ikur worldview of the Jews is when it comes to business. They do business with Jews. That's how they get to know us. And if they see that a Jew's honest, that a Jew's erlich, then it creates the greatest Kiddush Hashem in the world. And they want to become Jews because of it? Because I've never seen such honesty, such erlichkeit in my life? That's unbelievable. And that's really what it's what it's all about. You know, it says, again, so I'm going to try to make it short. So, Rav Moshe Feinstein's Yurtzeit. Rabin shall call B'nai Yisrael. Was this past Shabbos, Yud Gimel Adar. So I remember once my Rebbe said that, so they had asked him a shayla, why is it that Hascholas Gemara, when you start Gemara, they start Bava Metzia, they do Bava Kama. Yeah, it's not so easy. Why not start with something a little more so-called practical? Why not start with Brachas, Shabbos, Yontif, something? You know, it's easier for kids to sink their teeth into. So said Rav Moshe, no. The Messiah is we start with Bava Metzia and other such Mesechus. Why? And Bava Metzia, because you learn from childhood, it's ingrained in their heart and in their soul. Hey, this doesn't belong to you. It doesn't, it has a simon on it. You can't take it, you have to announce it. This, you're a damager. If you do this, you're chayiv because you damaged. Here you're chayiv, here you're potter. It's all about erlichkeit. It's all about being honest. And we want to ingrain that within the youth from the earliest age. From the earliest age, we want to make sure that they grow up with this Weltanschauung, that life is about being erlich. What's mine? It's mine, and if it's not mine, you have to return it, and if you damage something, you have to pay for it, and we get into the nitty-gritties of it, into the depths of it, because honesty and integrity is so crucial. I think maybe that's why, you know, when children start Chumash, which Chumash do they start with? Vayikra, right? Why do they start with Vayikra? So the standard, I think the standard line is, well, Vayikra, it's about Karbonis, it's about the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, so it's Kedusha, the Tahara, and children begin learning Torah, they're Kodesh, there's no Chet, right? They don't sin, they're not Bar Mitzvah yet, not Bas Mitzvah yet, okay, so they're learning, so that's Kedusha, the Tahara. I would like to suggest another reason why you start with Vayikra. Because in Vayikra, the pasuk tells us, "Daber el bnei Yisrael v'amat aleim odom ki yakriv mikem korban." When a person from you brings a korban, so the question is, why does it say odom? Just say ki yakriv mikem korban. When you bring a korban, what do you mean odom? So says Rashi. You know why it says odom? Loma nemar, odom loma nemar. Ma odom harishon loy hikriv min agezel. Shakol hoyer shalom, because everything belonged. The other Marishan, there wasn't even a whiff, an iota, the minutest detail of Gezel, because Adam owned the whole world. It wasn't shy of Gezel. So that's why it says Adam here. Maybe that's why we started Vayikra. The same thing that Rav Moshe said, why we start with Bava Metzia. Because you want to ingrain right away from the children, this is the ikkus. So it's the second pasuk, right? Adam ki amata aleim Adam ki yakav mikem korban. Why does it say Adam? Adam because you have to make sure you want to bring tzedakah and you want to bring korbanos. Just make sure that it's clean money, absolutely clean, absolutely clean. That's the lesson we're learning. And there's a lot more to say. I'll just end with the Sanzer Rebbe and others. The Igret de Pirke, who is a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, said an amazing thing. That one of the reasons why, in fact, that's why the Sanzer Rebbe never gave a bracha to anybody. They asked for their kids for a bracha. He wouldn't give a bracha unless you paid up the makolet, unless you paid up the grocer. So they all say the same idea, is because if you're not paid up and you're taking stuff and you're not paying for it, it's gzeila. If you steal, if you take money that doesn't belong to you, and you buy food with that money, you take food with that money, that food has a din tarfis. And we all know that, well, of course, all mitzvahs and averis affect the soul of a person, but there's nothing like when it comes to kashrus, when it comes to food, if it's treif, it's mamash poison for the neshama, absolute poison. He says, you want to know sometimes why children, when they're young, they look like they're such tzaddikim, and they daven, and they learn it, and all of a sudden, as they get older, they just go off. Now again, you speak to your local rabbi about this, but he says, you know what? Because maybe, the parents did some business or got some money ill-gotten, and then they bought food with it, and the food has a din of tarfis, and they gave it to the child, and therefore that's the reason why the child's neshama is infected and is poisoned. Maybe that's why they went off. Anyway, you just see the seriousness of it, that at the end of the day, you have to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. And the greatest way to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim, one of the greatest ways, the Aruch HaTzaddikim says, to bring the Geula, is to be Erech, is to be honest, is to earn kosher money, and to make sure that we set the bar, we set the example to the world of what it means to be an honest people. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I got it. Okay. See how we go. We should be at a stender. I like standing.
Yeah.
You gotta get a stender in this room. I like to stand, but I'll just. Rabbi Grunstein ended with the Baal Shem Tov, so I'll begin with the Baal Shem Tov. That many people are bothered very often about halacha when it comes to going to a Beis Din, halacha in business. In the more modern world, they don't even have a havamina that you go to a Beis Din. You know, you go to courts. Courts deal with business, and rabbis deal with hilchos nida, and rabbis deal with kashrus, and rabbis deal with... There's a whole chelik of Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, and a Jew is obligated to go to a Beis Din, and not to Arkalos Akum, not to secular courts. You're not allowed to go to secular courts, it's usur, unless you have a heter from a Beis Din. So why are people bothered? Because very often, you'll have a case where, according to all logic, you know that you're innocent. Or you know you're not chayiv this person money. Or you know that he is chayiv you money. And nevertheless, al pi halacha, it's going to come out that he's going to be pater, and he's not going to have to pay. You know he has an obligation, but you don't have witnesses, you don't have edim, there's a very high level, a very high threshold of evidence necessary to be mechayiv someone money. Amotzi mechaber ol araya. And therefore, it's very bothersome, because in a secular court, so in a criminal case, what's the threshold of evidence that you have to bring? Beyond a reasonable doubt. You have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to have someone have a criminal offense. For a civil court, what's the level of threshold of evidence? It's called a preponderance of the evidence. You just have to prove, more likely than not, you have to bring a lot of proofs, and you know the jury sits there, or the judge sits there, and he looks at all the proofs, and he makes a logical judgment based on how well you made your arguments, how many documents you brought supporting your claim, how many witnesses. But it's reasonable. Like, be reasonable. So I need two Aden Davka, and if I didn't do a Kinyan, I had to lift up a handkerchief so that I'm not chayil. It's not fair. I know he owes me money. If I go to Beis Din, I'm not going to get the money. If I go to a secular court, I'm going to get the money. And I know I'm right. So it bothers a person. Why do I have to go to Beis Din? It's not fair. Beis Din is going with this strange set of archaic rules that you find in the Torah. It doesn't make any sense. So listen to this amazing Baal Shem Tov. Listen to what he says. So at the very beginning of Parshas Mishpatim, the Parshas says, Eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneim. So these are the mishpatim we put before you. So Isa b'Zohar HaKadosh, the Zohar says, Ilein sidurin del yulgulin. So Parshas Mishpatim, which is all of the legal laws that we go through in courts, and damages. So the Zohar says, this Parsha, Rotze Lomer, is Inyan HaParsha Gilgulim. This whole Parsha is talking about reincarnation, Gilgulim. If you had to pick one parsha that has nothing to do with Gilgulim, it would be Mishpatim. What in the world does Parshas Mishpatim have to do with Gilgulim? You have Gilgulim all over the Torah, and they speak about Korach was a Gilgul of this, and Moshe was a Gilgul of that, but Parshas Mishpatim, you don't even have any biblical characters. Who's a Gilgul of who? How could you say that that is the parsha that speaks about Gilgulim? So says the Baal Shem Tov, Behu Tamua, Shehari HaParsha Medaber B'dini Mamonos. It's talking about monetary law. What in the world does that have to do with Gilgulim? Elish Yitachim. So he says, this is what it means. You go to Beis Din, and the Beis Din says, you are chayiv to pay that person money. Even if you know for a fact that you are right and he is wrong, and yet the Beis Din says you're chayiv to pay him money, but the Torah says you're chayiv because you didn't do a kinyan, or you didn't have edim, whatever it was that you were lacking. Al yikshelo, halot Torah's emesu, v'darchei darchei noam. So don't ask yourself the question, how could this be? How could this be? You have to trust the Torah is Torah's emes, and all of its ways are pleasant. Kizeu amitus haTorah v'nom darachet. This is the truth of the Torah, and this is the pleasantness of the Torah, that it's going to make you pay that money. Why? I know I'm innocent. Ki bevada mistama hayachayv l'chaver b'gilgul ha'avar. Because it must be that you were obligated to this person money in a previous incarnation, in a previous life. L'ish hadani mo. This guy that you're in a court case with. And now the Torah says you're obligated so that you're going to give back that money that you took from him in a previous life. And this guy that's lying and he's cheating, so who else did he say? Don't worry, he's going to end up paying for that. But you have to give the money back because that's your tikkun in this world. You have to return that money. He's saying something very, very special, very amazing. That if you want to be guaranteed to have a tikkun in this lifetime, and to correct and rectify whatever it is you're sent into the world to rectify, you have to do everything in your life al-pi Torah. The Torah is going to guarantee that whatever you're supposed to do in this world gets done and gets accomplished. If you live al-pi Torah, so Hashem doesn't play games, He sends you here for a mission. The mission is follow the Torah. If you follow the Torah, Hashem will make sure that you always encounter each person you were supposed to encounter, and every relationship you're supposed to have, and every damage you're supposed to suffer. It's all going to happen al-pi din ha-emes. But if a person goes to a secular court, even if he knows he's right, maybe al-pi emes la-amito, in the eternal sense of things, you weren't supposed to get that money. Or you were supposed to give that money to him. So when you go to a Beis Din, even if you leave saying, I know that he owes me the money, I just couldn't get him because my Kohen didn't have the right taina and we didn't do the Kinyan, it doesn't matter. You should walk away with a big smile on your face because you know for a fact that whatever took place in that Beis Din that was Paskin al Pi Torah, that's exactly what was supposed to happen. That's emes la'amito. That's the ultimate cosmic eternal truth that was what was supposed to happen. That's what Baal Shem Tov says. So, to not go to a Beis Din may look good in Svara, and you may feel like you're walking away with money, but you could have just stolen that person's money. Not only in a halachic sense, which it is gzeila, if you take money from a secular court, but maybe even if you won it, it would have aligned with Torah. But nevertheless, you really owed him that money in a previous gilgul. So it's always, always, always kedai to go to Beis Din, and even if you lose, you should have a big smile on your face. That's what the Baal Shem Tov teaches us. Okay, so now we get into the halachas. Okay? Fascinating cases. Here we're doing the halachas of employees and employers. It's Hilchas Schiros Poalim. This is Simon Shin Lamed Gimel in the Shulchan Aruch Hoshe Mishpat. Okay, so here's the case. And I'm sure this has happened to people. You know it's happened to people. You call an electrician to come to your house to do some work. And he doesn't have any slots this week, so he schedules you in like 2 weeks from now. So okay, fine. On a Wednesday, 2 weeks from now, you kind of save up all the things that he has to do, or he's a handyman. And you have a whole list, and it's pretty much a day's work, and you say, okay, in 2 Wednesdays from now, show up at my house, and you'll do the work. Okay, so 2 Wednesdays later, he gives you a call, and you totally forgot about this appointment, because it was 2 weeks ago, and you had to go out of town on business, and you totally didn't realize that he was going to even show up, and he's calling you all morning, and you're not answering, you're not picking up. So finally, you're busy all morning, you look at your phone at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you see like 10 missed calls from this electrician. And he says, look, I was calling you all morning, and I didn't even drive to your house because you live a half hour away, so I called you and make sure to confirm our appointment. You didn't answer your phone. I lost an entire day's work. I had other clients that could have used me today. You have to pay me for the day's work that I lost. Who's right in that situation? Do you have to pay him for the day's work that he lost? And does he have to prove to you that he had other clients available? What if he didn't have any other work available? you didn't really cause him a loss. Is this an out-of-pocket loss? Or is this what's called menias revah? He's just losing out on profit. Right? When you have someone that you hire, and there's no contract. Again, no contract, no kinyan. It's just a verbal phone call. You say, yeah, come at this time, and you'll do this work. So then, what is your obligation to that person? And who and when are you allowed to back out? That's the sugya of skiras pa'alim. So that's one question that we're going to have to answer. And question number two is very, very common shilas that happen all the time and come to Dasin, is when it comes to ganim, especially in Lakewood, to a gan, to like a preschool, little kids group. Okay, so you have loads of preschools, and there's obviously always more kids than preschools in a place like Lakewood. So they always need more and more preschools. So what happens? It's very hard to secure a spot. So you have to usually make a down payment or something like that. Okay, so this family waited until the end of the season. Usually you secure your spot a year in advance. So they waited towards the end of the sign-up season. And they call up the gan, and they say, okay, we want to come to your gan. So they say, okay, great. Let's say no down payment at all. He just says, okay, fine, you got to stop. Okay? Later on, as they get very close to the beginning of the school year, so the mom says, you know what? I decided to change my mind. I want to switch my kid to a different gan. I think that she needs a smaller playgroup. She needs more personal attention. They offer these therapies. There's a good reason to switch. And she says, I want to switch. So the ganan says, okay, that's very nice, but you owe me for this spot. You owe me a full year's tuition because I gave up other people that would have wanted that spot. And they ended up going to a different gan, and you made me lose out on a full year's tuition. So you owe me for the whole year. These cases happen all the time. So what is the halacha in that case? Does the mother owe for the spot? Do we say that she caused a loss to this gan? So she time is back. You know, it was the end of the season. I waited davka till the end. And nobody was looking for spots at that time. I know, because you're the only gan that had a spot open. And you have to prove to me that you had someone else lined up for the spot. If you could prove to me that you had someone else lined up for the spot, so then maybe you have a tie. But if you can't, then I don't owe you anything. So what do you think first? Any gut reactions? First, the electrician case. What would you say the electrician case? That's a common case.
It's not right. But I don't think he owed him anything. I think he has to have actual language. Both the God and the electrician has to have language in there to say if you terminate, you're still owing the money.
It's
because it should be. It's an industry standard thing.
All implied rest.
Right. I don't think the guy should be hired because it's a kind of acceptable that people will cancel. That's just that's your problem. You should have a backup. You should have people on wait. Meaning, just because you're an electrician, you gave your job to a thing. It's very common. You know, as an electrician, people cancel all the time. You should have a backup. Like, well, why should I be obligated to pay you for the whole day?
But there also should be a statute of limitations on that. You can't call the guy out before and say, hey, by the way, I don't need you anymore.
That's more establishing the loss. When is it going to generate a guaranteed loss? Let's say the guy says he had a loss. He lined up, he reserved his day. Every week he has a calendar. He's the electrician. He's making appointments. Remember, 2 weeks in advance is when he booked you, so he clearly had a pretty full schedule. And now he says, you caused me to lose that day. I would have had it booked. You know, Miss Thumb, I would have had it booked. I had lots of calls. Okay, I didn't put anyone on that day because you already reserved the whole day for me. Okay, so...
Minus the fact that he gets to sit, right?
Minus the fact of what?
That he gets to sit.
So, very good. That's a good question. So, how much do you owe him? So, he didn't do any work. Schar batala. So, we have a concept in halacha. Says that even if I caused you a loss, but you got to hang out on the beach instead of changing light bulbs.
So that's the question. Let's say somebody else calls him down and says, at that time, I need a job right now. I'm going to pay you twice as much as you would have made by the first guy. So now does he owe the original customer that difference?
No. Why not?
Because now if not for this guy giving him the job, he would have lost the extra whatever it was that he would have made by the second guy.
Okay, that's even if there's no grumman, you're not owed that money. Let's say he finds a different job, or you find him a different job. You call him up and say, you know what? My father-in-law also needs work at his house, and he lives over here. Sorry I messed up your schedule, but go there and work for him.
All right.
Does he have any taina?
You replace him.
Ziva taina. That's a separate taina. I don't think Ari is going to hold in court, but you are to pay. But let's say you at least fill up his loss. So if you fill his loss and say, I have a different job. He says, you know what? I don't want that job. I want your job. I'd rather sit on the beach. So on the beach, I reserved this day. I don't have to take a different job. I never said I was going to take a different job. You messed me over. You told me to come today. You never canceled. I called you 10 times in the morning. Okay? And would there be a difference if the guy showed up to the job? If that electrician, my case was where he called you 10 times, you never drove there. Let's say he drove there and he showed up at your house. So is that going to make any difference? We'll see. That's going to be a very, very important point in the halachas.
That's going to be the Gemara, you see the mud, or not the mud, you know, right before.
That's Sire Aram Urta. That's to be checked if the work was still viable. Here, for sure, the work was still there to be done, but it's halachah. Did he go or not?
I don't know if there's any halacha base, but I'm saying there should be like a timing on it. Like, exactly. I mean, you call the guy the night before, it's different than having the guy show up to the house.
That would go by the minhag. Usually there's a 24-hour cancellation policy. Yeah, usually a 24-hour cancellation policy. And then even that might, if it's not a clear minhag, it could be whatever's reasonable. The Beis Din will determine if you gave him 12 hours notice, okay, that's reasonable. But if you gave him 2 hours notice, so there's no way he's going to find another job. Okay, so let's see the halachas of Sfiras Poel. And all of this is where you made verbal contracts. Anytime you make a contract and you make kinyanim and you decide that this is going to be the terms, you're allowed to do that. As long as it doesn't go connected to halacha, and you're supposed to do that. You're encouraged to do that to avoid all the vagueness that's going to happen when you get into all these machlokism that we're about to see. But you're always encouraged to be very, very clear about your policies and to have someone sign on the dotted line, which is a kinyan. That's going to be a valid kinyan. Someone signing the contract. That's always advised. But here are cases where you didn't. It was Hamish. You know, you just did it al pet. Okay, so it says the Shulchan Aruch, Shinam Megimel Sifav. Hasokher es apoelim vehetu es balabais, or balabais hete osam, ein lehem ze al ze, ela tar oimis. So if a balabais hires a poelim, hires workers, but the workers are hired out to the balabais, and either one decides that, no, I'm not showing up to work, the balabais says, sorry, stay home, I don't need you. So they have no claim against one another other than tar oimis, other than a right to be upset at the other person. You're allowed to be upset at the other person. Okay, that's what it says. But then, in Sif Beis says, when is that the case where everyone has the right to back out and there's no monetary claim, although you're not nice and some hold that you shouldn't do it and it's not an erlich thing to do, but taromis means you could be angry at him, rightfully so, but you don't have a monetary claim. So when do we say that you're allowed to back out? She'ein lehem alav ela taromis b'shelo halchu davka b'shelo hayu yicholam lahaskir atzman emesh. K'shesachron balabai zed. That's davka, they didn't have another job the night before when you hired them. So they had no other potential labor. So they had one job on the table. You hired them, and then you said, don't come. So did you cause them any loss? No, you didn't cause them a loss. They had nothing else on the table. They were going to sit around doing nothing all day anyway. So what'd you do to them? So that's why they have no claim against you. They could just be upset because you got their hopes up.
They had no other job because you weren't looking for another job because they, you were scheduled. That'd be your time to back, right?
So they could have a time to back. Let's see what he says. Aval im hayu niskarim emesh. So we're going to see who is the onus of proof. But if they could have been hired yesterday, the achshav of Einam Niskaram Klal, and now you canceled an hour before the job, and they can't get another job to fill its place. Harei ze kedavar ha'avud lahem. So now you caused them a loss. You caused them a loss. V'nosa lehem scharam kapol batal. And you have to pay them their schar kapol batal, which means the difference between having to work that day or sitting on the beach. Which we say, how much would you take to not have to work today, but to still, you have to earn a living. So how much would you take?
Is that a standard rate or is that?
So the Taz says that the baseline, although we don't go with this, but this is where the starting point, is 50%. Which is interesting, 50%. Okay, but they say it goes case by case. Because if the guy has a super easy job, you know, it actually says that if you have a job that you love, if you're a melamed, so then there's no such thing as harbatala. Because melameds love teaching Torah. And learning Torah, and they'd rather teach and learn Torah than have a day off. Because what are they going to do on the day off? They're going to go to the base medrash and learn anyway. So they don't really have any schar batala, so you have to pay them the full amount, and then it says, unless you know that the guy's lazy, he doesn't like learning so much, and he just doesn't have any other job prospects, so he's tutoring kids. So then when they cancel on him, he's like, oh great, I'm going to go play basketball, I'm going to go watch TV, then you would pay him schar batala, and he would not get the full amount. So it is subjective
but
in every case.
Today was a different day.
What?
Guys, it's kidding me. I'm sure today was
the first day. Today I really wanted to learn.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the Beis Din will determine what's schar batala. Okay? Who knows schar batala? The im niskarim bepachos, and if they get a different job, but it's making less money than the job they were hired for, mishalom apachas, then you have to pay them the difference. So you're going to pay them $1,000 that day, they get a different job last minute for $500, you owe them the $500 that you caused them to lose. Okay. That's all in the case.
Does that apply in all cases?
What?
If you've got a job that day to do a huge job, if you hire them for a huge job and then you got a very small job the next day, you hire them, do you have to pay them the full difference? Yeah. It's not the same type of work.
You've paid him the full difference minus the Schar Batala. If he finished much earlier in the day, meaning we still are going to factor in Schar Batala. How much did he benefit from not having to do
a
huge job?
A huge job is something that you don't get very often. So like, it's a huge job.
Right.
So like, we'll reschedule for tomorrow. Or like, if, right? I'm sure like, right? Or
if he agrees to reschedule tomorrow, yeah.
No, that you, can say, like, you can't say like, this is the day and now I want the whole money for that huge, you know, it was a very limited job, where I'm sure you could, you know.
It's all about what he made you lose out on. It's what he made you lose out on. It's what the other job was.
Huge
it's
job
what the other job was. It's not about the job right now. It's what the other job was that you could have had. So usually you have a normal rate per day. So you lost your rate per day. So he owes you for a day's work. Okay? So that is the halacha. Now that's, well, there's going to be one factor we're going to throw in a minute, but let's first dissect that and understand why do you owe him money. So interestingly enough, the Gemara never talks about this case where the balabais, the employer, drops the employee. Never talks about the case. It talks about the case in the opposite direction. The employee agreed to do work for the employer, and the employer's work was time sensitive. So in that case, he had some flax that was soaking in the mishra, and if you don't take it out within the next 10 hours, it's going to all improve. So he hires the employee to take it out, and the employee cancels on him with no good reason, no onus, he cancels on him. So then the Gemara says, the employee needs to pay for the loss. He needs to pay for the loss of flax. So now the Rishonim say, okay, that's the Svara, so let's do the exact same thing in the opposite direction. Now the employer, the Gemara never speaks about this case, fires the employee, and the employee loses out on a day's work because he could have had work the night before. He had other calls. So you caused him a loss, and now you have to pay him. Right? It goes both ways, two-way street. If he didn't have any work the night before, so everyone agrees, ain lo olav el taroimus. He can be angry at you, but he has no monetary claim. But if he had work the night before, so it's the same case. You caused him a loss, right? That's the way we'd say it. Okay, so what's the mechanism operating here? So in the case where he caused your flax to get ruined, and he quit on you, which is the case of the Gemara, it's very clear that we're talking about dinei nezikin. He caused you damage, out-of-pocket loss. I had some beautiful flax soaking, and it's now ruined, so I lost my flax. You have to pay me for it. Nezik. Here, what did he make you lose out on? The employee. If you're the employee, what did he make you lose out on?
Profit.
No out-of-pocket loss. It's called menias revach. He caused you to lose out on profit. That's a whole different set of halachas. You can't borrow from dinei nezikin, from damages, into menias revach. I mean, we know that when it comes to davar avud, to hefsid, there's many different halachas. Menias revach, you know, by hilchas chol hamoed. Many halachas is a very big difference between out-of-pocket loss and foregone profits. So here, by the employee losing his day's work, it's just foregone profits. So what's the mechanism that's being mechayev, the employer, to have to pay him for the day's work that he lost?
What
is he paid foregone profits?
If he knew for sure that he would get something else, wouldn't that still be a damage?
There's no out-of-pocket loss? No. Damage means I have money or objects.
What if you
and
know it's a set thing that comes in every day?
Doesn't matter. That's every day's profit. That's every day's profit. It's got to be that I have something right now that you caused me to lose. I don't have it right now. It's not nezik. So then, how are you being mechayev this employer to have to pay? It's minyas revach. So the Maharam quoted by the Ketos, and this is how the Ketos paskins, he says, you know what? That's a really good svara. Who says that you could be mechayev? In fact, we know that the only way you can be mechayev in terms of nezikin is what's called garmi. Garmi means if I indirectly cause you a loss. The guy didn't cause you a loss via dime. He didn't go and destroy your day's work and punch it. Right? There's nothing there. So what did he do? He caused you, through his words, to forego, to lose a day's work. That's called garmi. It means I indirectly caused you a loss. So we know that by halachas garmi, there's no such thing as sheves. Sheves is when you damage a person and he loses out on work days, you have to pay him for those work days. You injure a person, he's in the hospital for a few days of work, he loses out those days of work, you pay sheves. Sheves is not nezek. Nezek's for breaking his leg. Sheves is for the missed work. So then you have to pay sheves. But by garmi, there's no sheves. Everyone agrees on that. When you have an indirect loss, so I don't have to pay sheves for foregone work. I only have to pay for the damages that I caused indirectly. But you can't, it's already too indirect, right? It's too far removed to say that I indirectly caused you damage and I indirectly caused you to lose out on a day's profit because of my damage. So everyone agrees that there's no din of garmi by sheves. So therefore, the Ketos Paskins can negate the Shulchan Aruch. He goes against the Shulchan Aruch and says that, you know what? This employee cannot extract money from the employer. He's not allowed to take the money from it. And therefore, the employer's off the hook. He's off the hook because it wasn't direct damage. That's it. So he says. However, all of the posts can say that this is a Das Yachid, and we don't even use it as a Kimli. When it comes to Hilchas Choshen Mishpat and a Beis Din, there's something called Kimli, where if you have a legitimate minority opinion, that's the word legitimate is subject to different opinions, but if you have a legitimate minority opinion, you can claim like that opinion to avoid someone extracting money from you. So maybe the employer can say, I hold like the Maharam, I hold like the Ktos, and therefore you can't extract money from me? No, this is such a minority opinion that we don't even allow it to be a Kimli. So we throw that out. Okay, so now that's not the Pshat. So let's go back to the Shulchan Aruch. So then what is the Pshat? So the Sma says, no, you know what? It is Garmi. It is Garmi. And here, there's Garmi even by foregone wages. And he doesn't explain it. And there's different parts of trying to explain what's the Svara, but clearly Ktos argues on it. And he says, no, it's Garmi. You cause him an indirect loss because he had other jobs on the table. Evidently, that's enough. It's not Shevis. That's not foregone work. It was on the table right now. And therefore, we do consider it as you caused me a loss right now. And he says, that's what it's Garmi. However, other Rishonim say, no, it's something called Davar HaAvud. Davar HaAvud. What's Davar HaAvud? This is a big nafkamin is between these two. So Davar HaAvud means that the Ktos explains that something called Kiblu Ze Al Ze. When I'm an employee, let's say I'm the electrician, and you know that I have lots of jobs getting scheduled all the time, right? You know that. And you hired me to come on Wednesday in 2 weeks, right? That was the case. You hired me to come on Wednesday in 2 weeks. Since you knew that I have lots of jobs and I'm a busy person, so you obligated yourself, Kiblu Ze Al Ze, that if you cancel, you're going to pay me the money. It's as if you obligated yourself, without saying anything, Minastam, you obligated yourself to guarantee me that day's work. Why would you guarantee me a day's work? Because I would only take your day and schedule it on my calendar if you guaranteed it, because otherwise I have 10 other people calling me to schedule work. So it makes sense that any time I have other work on the table, which was a prerequisite to call it a Davar HaAvud, that it's Kiblu Ze Al Ze, there's an unspoken understanding between the two parties, that you're guaranteeing me that there's work. And if you don't have a good reason for canceling, that we call onus, if you don't have an onus reason for canceling, and you made a mistake, you owe me the money, because that's the only reason I took the job, is because you guaranteed me that day's work. Right? That's what he says, is the pshat here, by Davar HaAvud.
Is the worker mechayev to try to find more work?
Yes, he is mechayev to try to find more work. Now, how much effort does he have to put in? It's unclear.
He's a scramble that day.
No, I don't know about that. I just said, how much effort he has to put in is unclear. He has to, if whatever he normally does on a day,
well,
try to find work.
Have a packed schedule. They have another person they can go to.
So if he does, it says in the Shulchan Aruch that if he has other work that day, so then there's no loss whatsoever, and the employer, potential employer, is public.
Or if he doesn't have work, he would have gotten work. You call a plumber to come to your house right now to snake something, and he says, okay, I'll be there in 5 minutes. And then a minute later, you say, oh, never mind. And
yeah, he didn't have another job on the table.
Lined up, so then he wouldn't have to.
Yeah, have paid it. Yeah. It's only if he has something lined up and he cannot find something right now. Meaning, you made him lose a day's work, right? That's how you have to say it. You made him lose a day's work. Okay, now, here's a big question. That's going to be a difference between these two opinions. Who has the onus of proof? So let's say, now, I'm the guy who hired the electrician, and the electrician says, you made me lose a day's work, pay me. So I say to him, which you always look in a Saint of Bezin, prove it. If you want to attract money from me, you have to prove me. Show me text messages, show me an email, show me a call from someone. Now, what's the level of proof? The Bezin's going to decide what he has to do to prove that there was other work potentially on the table. If the guy always has a packed schedule, so the Bezin can say, look, we know the guy probably got a call. He has worked the day before, he has worked the day after. So he clearly reserved this day for you, and he only had 2 weeks out when you hired him. Okay, fine. But let's say he doesn't have work out every day, and not every second. So he says, prove it. So let's see if anyone can say, would there be a nafkamina between saying it's Garmi versus Davar HaAvud?
Who's the muksak in that
month? No, the muksak's always the guy, is the employer. He's holding the money now. The employee wants to extract it. So would there be a nafkamina here? It's a little subtle, but here's the nafkamina. If you say it's garmi, we're in the sugya of nezek. When you're in the sugya of nezek, so then we always say hamotzi mechavero alavarai. If you want to extract money for damages, then you have to prove it. You can't take money away from me unless you prove it. But if you say that it's a societal contract unspoken contract that if, when you hire me, you know I'm a busy guy, and if I'm going to take your job, it means you're guaranteeing me that day, unless you have a really good reason for canceling, then it doesn't matter. You don't have to prove it midin motzi mechaver al arayah. From the beginning, when we shook hands, I guaranteed you that day, minastam. Minastam, if I'm a busy guy, and I reserve that day, and you know that I have other work available, yeah, then you have to pay in full, even without proof. And he doesn't need to show you different phone calls, because as long as the basin says...
The proof is the fact that you had an appointment, not that he had other work.
No, it has to be a proof that he gave up other work for scheduling you, that he had potential other work that day. Now, the basin's going to decide whether, again, still he's going to need a little bit of proof just to show that when you shook hands, that was the situation, but that's a much lower bar of proof.
Because the proof that he needs to show at that point is that you've already agreed to
You've already agreed to make the payment, and that you knew that he was a busy guy that could have had other work. That he did you, that when he scheduled that work, he was giving up potential other work that was on the table.
Can you be very, very, like, exact and say, can you just tell me who you said no to? Would the other guy have to be...
So if you say, you didn't guard me, it would
no,
be
no,
a high
no,
level?
No, no, like, keep on the side.
No, as long as you...
I asked for a big word, like, who was the guy that you said no to?
No, it doesn't matter who he said no to. Is that when I, the employer who hired him to do the electrobrick in my house... Does the Beis Din say that from the look of this case, I, the employer, should have known that he had work on the case?
Like, actual bar. Like, I just want to say, like, who is the guy?
No, you don't have to be a bar. It just has to be that the Beis Din has to agree that this guy knew when he hired the electrician that the electrician was foregoing other work by scheduling in that whole day. He took a whole day out of his busy calendar and he scheduled you in. So then you'd owe it. So how do we paskin lemaisa? So here... We do say that there's a kimli on the table. Mizriel Rosenberg, a dayan in Lakewood, says that the Beis Din accepts a kimli in this case. So what happens is, if the employer, the guy who hired the electrician, says, you have to prove it to me, midin nezek, midin garmi, that you had other work on the table, he can demand that proof. And then the guy would have to show a text, or an email, or a call, and the Beis Din would decide what proof. But he can't just rely on the shita that says davra avud kiblu zel zeh, that they agreed to an unspoken contract.
The power of kimli means that there's a shita that is accepted, that this is the rule, and the guy I hold like that shita has to prove in other cases holds like that shita. Like, it's kind of a funny thing, right?
It's very funny. It's in dinim mamonos to extract money.
We're Ashkenaz 44 circuit.
Because when you have muchzak, because all midin chazaka. When you're a muchzak of money, it takes a real a chazaka is already a halachic proof that the money belongs to me. So if you want to take it out of my hands, you better have something really good to take it out of my hands. So a kimli is factored.
Let's say I'm adjudicating two cases at once. Can I hold kimli on both sides? Let's say I'm a victim and I'm a offender. And, you know,
if they're two separate cases, yes.
So I hold like this opinion for sure. And yeah. I hold like this opinion for sure.
Not for sure. Say, I hold like this opinion in this case.
But kimli was
I hold like this opinion in this case.
Kimli's kind of emphatic. Like, you have a tarti to sasri on one.
I don't know about in one case. I don't think you could do it.
Not
in
one case, but even two cases.
I imagine if they're separate cases, it wouldn't be an issue. I've never heard of it. The Beis Din is sometimes gives the time of kimli for the person. He doesn't have to make the time.
Okay,
it
not
says, we know this halacha. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, imagine you're like a...
I hear.
But kimli's not like a difference in sock. It's just a burden of proof that it's acquiring.
No, you could say I hold kimli. No, in this case, it's burden of proof. But sometimes it could be that one says you don't have to pay the money at all, and the other one says you do. And you say, I hold like one says I don't have to pay, and that's it. You need a dayan to know when you say kimli, meaning which opinion is strong enough to use as a kimli. Okay, let's just plug it into the last case. So what about now our babysitter, our playgroup, preschool? So she reserved a spot, and now she says... I'm backing out. So would she have to pay for that spot that was foregone? And now the woman can't fill it. She cannot fill it, and now she wants schar batala for a whole year preschool. That's a pretty good amount of money. Right? There's not such a big difference between having 10 kids or 11 kids in your class, so it's almost full tuition. Meaning, until that spot gets filled. Meaning, yeah, they're both going to have to scramble. I'm sure the woman who changed her preschool.
At that point, you consider a profit. It's not
Right,
so
I was going to say.
So
what?
What if
at that point, the 34th kid or 33rd kid, it's all profit at that point. Your expenses are covered.
Yeah, expenses are covered, but how much would you take to have one less kid in your class? Because it's annoying.
Well, it's not about that. You said that you can't charge for profit.
No. I said that was the Maram. We don't pass it like that.
Oh,
That was Moran. We don't pass anything. That was by that was one shita.
Shoot.
No, sorry. Remember the case of the electrician was.
I don't like that guy.
He said you can't do a Kimli like Moran. They already threw him out. So that was an example where you have a real case on the page with a ketos. A ketos is like a major like opinion on the page where the poskim say we don't use this even as a Kimli. Whenever you're learning the sugyas in Chosh Mishpat, the first question you ask like a dayan when you're getting shemush is, okay, I saw that this opinion says this, and he argues on the Shulchan Aruch and everyone else. Can you see a Kimli like this? Because it's going to make a world of a difference. In Chosh Mishpat, it's crazy. You have to know all the halachas cold, because you even have to know the minority opinions that don't agree with the Shulchan Aruch, because there's Kimlis in play. So there's always minority opinions hold a lot of sway.
Would it make a difference if in schools it's sort of a normal thing for people to book a spot and back out sometimes?
If there's a minug, then we could say minug mevatal halacha. If there's a clear minug. Here, there's not a clear minug. A lot of times, a person backs out, and they say the minug, if anything, is the opposite. You booked a spot, you made me lose a spot, you owe me money.
I mean,
if people just back out willy-nilly, so then the whole system would collapse.
Not to fight with the hypo, but I think the minug is more that they always make you sign a contract.
Yeah.
So I think, obviously, the halacha is different, so you're asking.
Yeah, but if they did it, then there's no clear minhag, because no one ever does it the other way, which is verbal agreement, so then there's no minhag, because no one does that.
Your case, she signed them at the last minute, so she probably books him, but she probably just takes someone else's slot.
That's what she's claiming. She says, I waited until the end of the season, you weren't full, you're the only preschool that wasn't full, and who says you were going to fill the slot? If you can prove it, then you can prove it. But I'm saying her time is that minastam, you weren't going to fill that slot. Prove that you had someone that called and said, I want this slot. So again, it's going to come down to the mafokus we just said. It's going to come down whether it's going to be garmi, which is going to be nezikin, which means then the ganenet would have to prove it and show a call on the phone or a request on an email. Or if we say that it's kiblu za'al zeh, davar avu, that it's just a social contract that they made between each other, that if you're going to take this spot, then you're doing it with the understanding that if you back out, then you have to make me whole. So then she would have to pay, even if there wasn't a clear proof, even if it was just from the circumstantial, that there probably would have been someone to take the spot. So it's going to come into that machlokas, and we're always going to be able to say garmi in that case. But let me give you one more situation that happens often. Let's say that there was three spots open, okay? And then this woman backs out. This woman backs out. And then there was an agreement that if you take a spot, you would have to pay the money because you would reserve the spot. And then someone else comes and takes and joins the preschool. So you say, okay, good, someone else joined the preschool. You filled my spot. So now I don't have to pay you anything. She says, what are you talking about? That person wasn't filling your spot. They were going to come along anyway. They were going to come on along anyway. And therefore, you still owe me the money for your spot. You still owe me the money for your spot.
You didn't cause her any loss.
There's still two spots open.
What's the difference with them coming after you or coming before? It's still the same thing.
There's still two spots.
The point is, you didn't cause any loss.
So you didn't cause her any loss because you didn't have full spots.
She didn't have any spots. So whether I came or didn't come didn't affect you.
Very good.
But if there's an agreement.
There's one spot or three spots.
Because now
it's all profit anyways.
You didn't cause me a loss. She didn't have to turn anyone away. She didn't call her a loss.
Why would she turn other people away if there's
okay.
one more spot?
Let's say you guaranteed her the money. So let's say you guaranteed her the money if she didn't fill the slot. And now she says, so you guaranteed her the money. She gets to keep $1,000 if the slot doesn't get filled. You're booking this slot. You're paying $1,000 for this slot. And if it doesn't get filled, she gets to keep $1,000. So now
if
someone...
To me, if you have that contract
anyway... you have a contract.
That's
not the...
If the contract is you're paying half for cancellation, even if they fill the spot. What does one do with the other?
So yes. That is ultimately going to be the lacha. If you agree, and then someone else joins, so we don't say that they filled your slot.
She paid extra profit.
She agreed it, so you have to pay... You lose a deposit.
What? What if you have a minus? If your circumstances change... Then
if you agreed that even midin onus, it depends what it says in the contract, if you made a contract. If you didn't make a contract, then the last thing we'll end with is if there's an onus, everyone's pater. All the cases I said was that the guy was negligent and he forgot that the electrician was hired for that day. But if he had a medical emergency that day and he couldn't be home and he didn't answer his phone, he does not owe anything. When it comes to onus, if it was beyond your control and you were not able to answer your phone that day or have the electrician come to your house or FPL turned off the power and nobody could do work, then it's a loss for the poem. The worker gets the loss because he's trying to extract money from you, and we can't prove whose fault it was because onus is beyond our control. So anytime it's onus beyond our control, so that's what the halacha would be. So keep that in mind whenever you hire someone. So it's always good to first stipulate everything in advance. But if you did not, so then you have to be very, very careful, because if he can prove that you caused him a loss, you would be chayv to pay that money in a beis din. And even if you felt that you were innocent, so in the previous Gilgul, you probably owed him money anyway. As Baal Shem Tov says, you should be happy that you're giving him the money and you're getting your tikkun in this world. Okay.
Go ahead.